Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. What do Christian Bale, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and Jaden Smith all have in common? They're all being recognized this weekend for creating some of the year's most memorable on-screen performances. Bale and Ejiofor are top contenders for Best Actor at Sunday's 86th Annual Academy Awards. Jaden Smith, not so much.
What was your mistake? Trusting me? Depending on me, thinking that I could do this?
Now I'm giving you an order.
You wouldn't give any other ranger that order. I'm not a coward.
Father-son duo Will and Jaden Smith there in a clip from M. Night Shyamalan's latest flop, After Earth, which racked up a total of 6 nominations at the 34th Annual Razzie Awards, or Golden Raspberry Awards. Unlike the Oscars, the Razzies are celebrating the year's worst films, the most pathetic performances, and cringeworthy screenplays. That's on Saturday night. John Wilson is creator and head Raspberry and joins us now with more on this year's nominees. Great to have you back with us, John.
Great to be with you. I find it amusing that the dialogue you just played accidentally references one of the competitors of After Earth for Worst Picture, The Lone Ranger.
Oh, well, you know, they're all, you can reel
they're
them all in.
They're all of a piece, yes. Birds of a feather, as it were.
You know, M. Night Shyamalan has not had such a good record since hitting it big with The Sixth Sense. What made his latest such a stinker, do you think?
Well, let me offer you a mnemonic to remember how to pronounce his name. I always think in my head, Shyamalan's a ding-dong. There's a rumor in the business, and I should say it is just a rumor, that Will Smith, who was behind this movie and is the father of Jaden Smith, as you mentioned, hired Shyamalan because he thought Shyamalan would be so intimidated by Will Smith's power and success that he would let Smith direct it. And if it didn't turn out well, Will Smith wouldn't be blamed. And we actually have a picture we're using in the ceremony where Shyamalan is standing next to the camera looking a little dejected, and right next to him, also behind the camera, is Will Smith gesticulating wildly, apparently teaching his son to overact. The sad thing here is Jaden Smith actually had a career going. He did a remake of The Karate Kid that did quite well a couple of years ago, and Mom and Dad stepped in with this great big sci-fi project that Dad co-starred in and just stomped on the momentum that he had going.
Well, this is going to be the subject of therapy many years from now in some Los Angeles expensive therapist's office. But let's go to the Canyons. Only one nomination for Lindsay Lohan as Worst Actress. Now, it sounds like the Canyons got snubbed by the Razzies.
She's kind of a perennial with us. We call people like that Razzie repeat offenders. And her movie was released in such a way that by Academy rules, which we tend to follow as part of the parody that we're doing, under Academy rules, her film would not have been eligible, but we looked at it and said, it's Lindsay Lohan. You kind of have to give her her creds. And it's a picture that the man who wrote and directed it has done some pretty serious stuff in the past. He's the screenwriter of Taxi Driver. But it's another one of those things where she's not really investing a whole lot in the character or the story, or, you know, she's Lindsay Lohan. What can I say? I think it's rather sad because she had such potential to do something with the talent she had, and now she's a Razzie nominee again.
I figured I have to find him attractive on some level. You cast him as the lead in the movie.
No, that's not true. I did not cast him in the movie.
You made me cast him as the lead in the movie.
No, we've been over this. I didn't make you do anything. You hired him as a favor to Gina, and that's why he's in the movie, isn't it?
Okay. It ain't no Taxi Driver. I guess that's all we can say. A first-time nod for the A-list actor and former Oscar nominee, Johnny Depp. He is up for Worst Actor for his role in The Lone Ranger.
He plays Tonto, which is a character it's almost impossible not to be offensive doing these days. The way that he dealt with it is he smeared bird poop all over his face, ran black lines down his cheeks, put a dead crow on his head. You know, Jay Silverheels, as Tonto 60 years ago, was no less offensive than Johnny Depp is in 2013. And it's the kind of thing, one of the devices we use in our show, we find funny but actual nasty critics' quotes, more than one critic compared this decision to do this movie to John Travolta doing Battlefield Earth. So
a perennial Razzie favorite. Here's just a clip from The Lone Ranger.
Eyes cut by the bullets that killed him. From the great beyond, he will protect you. And the ones you love.
You want me to wear a mask?
The men you seek think you are dead, Kimosabe. Better to stay that way.
Now, do you think Johnny Depp may have gotten a boost in the voting for Worst Actor when he blamed critics for the Lone Ranger's poor showing in the box office?
Yes, that was not a smart move. And they did it when the film was released in Europe. It didn't really impact the grosses here, which were rather pitiful. As we are pointing out in our ceremony, the executives at Walt Disney Pictures had to admit to their shareholders that that movie lost $200 million.
Wowie.
You just don't see why they bothered to remake this thing. And all along, the Disney executives who wanted to have this happen were told, no one knows this character anymore. No, it hasn't. The show has not been on TV for 40 years. The characters are forgotten. There's no, you know, other than Johnny Depp, you don't have a reason for anyone to want to see this. And then when Johnny Depp gives the performance he gave, then you've got no reason for anyone to go see this.
Before the Oscars this weekend will be the Golden Raspberries on Saturday night. We're speaking with John Wilson, creator and head Raspberry, honoring the worst movie performances, the worst films, and the worst scripts for this year. Of all the nominees, Movie 43 has the worst rating from critics and audiences. Now, this is according to Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes.
Do you think that those aggregated reviews are a good indicator of what might happen at the Razzies?
We actually have an ongoing relationship with Rotten Tomatoes because we rely on them as one of our three major indicators. The three main things that we look at in trying to decide what the logical contender are: critical response, and as you just said, Movie 43, I think it was 96% negative. We look at box office versus budget. What did it cost? How much was lost? And clearly the leader there would be Lone Ranger. And then we also look at what I call Razzie pedigree, which was, we were discussing with Lindsay Lohan. Does this person or do the makers of this film have a history with us? One of our stalwarts from the early years, Sylvester Stallone, is back for the first time in, I think, a decade because he had three bad movies in 1 year. But we do look at the Rotten Tomatoes, tomato meters, what they call it. And anything that gets below 50% will at least, you know, take a short look at. Anything that gets below 25 is probably going to make the nominating ballot. Anything that gets below 10 is likely to end up on the ballot at least somewhere.
And what do they get?
I just made six of them in my ex-wife's backyard on Sunday afternoon. They are handcrafted. It kind of looks like a Grammy Award. It's a bunch of film pieces put together, a film, 35-millimeter film core, a Super 8 film reel, and then a handcrafted raspberry stuck atop a pedestal and all spray-painted lovely gold. We like to say that the street value of it is about $4.97, which is an accurate reflection of the street value of most of the nominees.
Let's hear just a clip from Movie 43 with A-lister.
Oh, do we have to?
Well, you know, block your ears. Here's Naomi Watts.
Written assignments are to be done in black ink. When are you going to get that through your thick skull, Mr. Morris?
Miller.
That's a detention.
Naomi Watts there from Movie 43. I mean, this was a star-studded cast. I wonder if we as an audience are even more amazed when a celebrated actor has a terrible, terrible performance.
Well, this particular film took years to complete, and I would argue perhaps it never was completed. But it's a whole bunch of short little pieces that are glued together, and there's sort of a running backstory that Dennis Quaid is pitching an awful script to a studio executive. But it is amazing when you look at all the names that are in it. I mean, Halle Berry and Hugh Jackman, and as you just played, Naomi Watts, and Kate Winslet. And I mean, it's just an amazing number of names, all of whom you would presume know better than to do something like this. The man who was essentially behind the whole thing and directed a couple of the segments is one of the Farrelly brothers, the guys who about 20 years ago did Dumb and Dumber, which I will admit it's a stupid movie, but I did think it was funny.
And Something,
and
about,
something
Mary.
About Mary.
Yeah.
And so that credential convinced all of these people, well, this is the guy who did that. Maybe he knows better than I do. And among the more astounding moments in it are the Halle Berry sequence. She's challenged by, it's a game of truth or dare at a restaurant. She's challenged to mash a bowl of guacamole with her breast. And she has a prosthetic breast about the size of a basketball. And you just keep going, what? You're an Oscar winner. You're a Razzie winner, too, but you're an Academy Award winner. What are you doing?
Well, do you think any of these movies are worth watching for sheer entertainment value? Like, can a movie be so bad that it's good? It can almost take on a kind of camp cult status.
Those are the ones that I love. And the touchstones from that league would be Showgirls, which is the most amazingly tasteless movie ever made. The review on that one said, at last, someone has made a movie about Las Vegas that's more tasteless than Las Vegas. Unfortunately, I don't think we have a so bad it's fun movie this year. Most of what we have, After Earth is so bad that one of our members said they saw it on an airplane and they were actually thinking about walking out.
Well, all right. So After Earth, poor M. Night Shyamalan. Thank you for the mnemonic reminder, by the way. But do you ever feel badly? I mean, if you ever ran into this guy, would you feel badly about sort of raspberrying him over and over again?
He's pretty consistent delivering Drek since the turning point for him was when he had a script called Lady in the Water, which won him, I think, 2 or 3 Razzies and got him nominated for several. And he has essentially, I mean, look at what he's done since. The Last Airbender, which to me sounds like somebody who can flatulate around corners. The Happening, where trees and bushes are trying to kill humans by, I don't even know what logic there was to that. And now After Earth. The man is definitely on the skids. And I think as objectively as I can look at it, he certainly has played a role in putting himself there. It's not like somebody did it to him.
All right, John Wilson. So what does he get from John Wilson, head Razzie?
Ah, you're looking for one of these. Here we go. Back off from the mic. I don't want to get you splattered.
John Wilson, founder of the Razzies, head Raspberry. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Golden Raspberry or Razzie Awards are celebrating Hollywood's worst this Saturday. More information at wordofmouthradio.org. We just heard about some of the worst films of 2013. Now to a story from an unabashed fan of B-movies. Dana Gould. In addition to being a stand-up comedian and television actor, Gould was also a longtime writer and producer on The Simpsons, where his love of B-films and science fiction often crept into his writing. Here he shares a story from his podcast, The Dana Gould Hour, about a science fiction film from 1971 that broke ground, not for special effects, but for featuring one of the first interracial kisses in celluloid history.
If you're talking about surviving the apocalypse, or any situation that is, shall we say, apocalypse adjacent, then you've got to talk about the Omega Man. The 1971 Charlton Heston Last Man on Earth sci-fi classic. Based on a novel by the great Richard Matheson called I Am Legend. Sound familiar? It was written in 1954 and tells the story of a plague of vampirism that wipes out all of humanity except for poor Robert Neville, who has to deal. I Am Legend is an excellent book. Such a great fun read. Actually, Stephen King cites it as a major influence, and really easy to see why. Highly recommend. From the Gould book bag to you, I Am Legend. Before it was made into the Omega Man, it was made into the 1964 Vincent Price schlocker The Last Man on Earth, which Richard Matheson actually wrote, but he didn't like the way it came out, so he changed his name in the credits to Logan Swanson, which I think sounds vaguely porny. Maybe that's just me. I really like The Last Man on Earth. It looks a lot like Night of the Living Dead, but it predated that film by 4 years. The only problem with the film is that Vincent Price is the hero. He's the regular Joe that you're supposed to relate to, and that never quite comes off.
December 1965. Is that all it has been since I inherited the world? Only 3 years. It seems like 100 million.
Eventually, he meets a woman, but it turns out she is not all that she seems. Ain't that always the way? There's one really good part of the film at the very end where Vincent Price, facing down his army of attackers, gets off one great Vincent Price line.
You freaks! All of you. All of you freaks! I'm a man. The last.
The film did not do a ton of business. In fact, when The Omega Man went into pre-production, only 7 years later, the producers had never even heard of it. But I guess the guy who owned the rights informed them. I guess they struck a deal. In Charlton Heston's book, The Actor's Life, which are his printed journals, his quote is, "Screened The Last Man on Earth today at Warner's. Nothing against Vinny, but it's not that much." My favorite scene in The Omega Man is right at the very beginning when Heston, standing alone in a big intersection in downtown Los Angeles, imagines that all the payphones start ringing.
There is no phone ringing, damn it!
There is no phone.
Nice and creepy. The vampires from I Am Legend have now become a band of technology-hating albino pyromaniacs, thus dispensing with the crosses and stakes and allowing Charlton to handle things in a more Hestonian manner. Something else is very different in The Omega Man from the other movie and from the book. The early 1970s was the heyday of blaxploitation cinema.
Up yours! Get out of the way!
Shaft's his name. Shaft's his game.
When Foxy Brown comes to town, all the brothers gather round. 'Cause she can really shake them down.
Foxy lady, foxy lady.
And the producers of The Omega Man thought, wow, those blaxploitation films are making a lot of money. I'd like to make some of that money too. And so, The Omega Man became the first post-apocalyptic blaxploitation kinda zombie movie.
And if the whole family can't bring him down out of that
hunky paradise, brother.
Forget the old ways, brother. All the old hatreds, all the old pains. Forget and remember, the family is one.
And then there's Rosalind Cash, the female lead in the film. Off-screen, supposedly, she was somewhat intimidated by acting against Charlton Heston, who was, after all, Moses. But on-screen, she has no trouble at all.
Don't turn, just stand. When I want you to turn, I'll turn you on or off, up or around. I'll turn you. Now cool it.
My name's Robert.
Your name's Mud.
But they became friends.
You're sweet. It's okay, Tommy. This is the man, and I mean the man. But he's cool. It's okay.
Friends who kiss on the lips.
Now, what you thinking?
Well, you know the old song? If you were the only girl in the world and I were the only boy, okay. But till then, don't bother me. I guess I'm the only boy. You know, it's been a long, long time. I'm not sure I remember how this goes.
The Omega Man has one of the first interracial love scenes in a major motion picture. And it happened because Charlton Heston, right-wing, arch-conservative Charlton Heston made it happen. I have to say, from a first-hand perspective, I did Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect, the show that he had on ABC before the HBO series. I did it with Charlton Heston back in the late 1990s, and I have to tell you, although we disagreed on just about everything, he could not have been a nicer guy. After the show, I told him how much I loved Planet of the Apes, and I'll never forget it. I said, you know, this might sound dorky, but when I was a kid, Planet of the Apes meant as much to me as baseball means to most kids. And I'll never forget it. He put both hands on my shoulders, and he said, this might be dorky too, but I'd be happy to send you a photo from the film if you'd like. And I wrote down my address, and I handed it to him, and he put it in his pocket, and 4 days later, showed up in the mail. And it is framed on my wall to this day, and I still have the envelope. That is not the end of the Omega Man story. It was remade again in 2007 with Will Smith under the original title, I Am Legend. And I am willing to bet that the entire budget of the Omega Man probably came close to the latte budget on I Am Legend. But the Omega Man is the one that I love. One last little tidbit, and this is a spoiler alert if you've never seen the film. The fountain at the very end of the movie, into which Charlton Heston bleeds to death, is the very same fountain at the beginning of Friends, both shot on the Warner Brothers ranch in beautiful downtown Burbank.
Dana Gould, host of the podcast The Dana Gould Hour. You can find a link to his story on our website, wordofmouthradio.org. However you choose to do it, enjoy your Oscar or anti-Oscar weekend. Happy to have you with us today. And if you do like what you heard, there is much more at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also follow us. You can send us your feedback and share your ideas for the program on Facebook and on Twitter. After all, the most fascinating stories tend to travel by word of mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Join us for more Monday at 2 on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Word of Mouth is produced by
Taylor Quimby,
Logan Shannon,
Zach Nugent,
and senior producer Maureen McMurray.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals
and not those of NHPR,
its board of trustees,
or its underwriters.
To subscribe to our podcast and listen to past shows,
go to wordofmouthradio.org.
You can also join us on Facebook at Word of Mouth Radio.
Follow us on Twitter at Word of Mouth.
And check out a playlist of music from the program on Spotify.
Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.